Okay. So, if you didn't get the handout, I'll put it right over here. It's an example of actual precise circles of osculation or osculating circles on an actual parabola. I was somewhat vague about what these things were yesterday, but we have time to get more precise now. So last time we talked about curvature. It's a measure of how tightly your curve is turning. It doesn't have anything to do with time, it just has to do with the shape of the curve. So a little bit more precisely, it was the magnitude of the derivative of direction, which way you're going, with respect to distance. How far have you gone? The direction is the unit tangent vector, more formally, which has no physical units. And distance is arc length. You know, how far have you gone from some fixed start point until now? So it's like you're driving your car. I think I told one of you this after class. You go 100 meters, how much does the direction of your compass needle, if you have a compass pointing to north, how much does that change? How many degrees does your direction change as you go 100 meters, right? It's not quite done in angles. It's measuring the how much a certain unit vector changes. But you should think of it as roughly like that. How many radians per meter, right, have I turned? Right? And it's not quite in angles, unfortunately, because that would make the actual computations worse. So instead it's just done, okay, what is the magnitude of the rate of change of the unit tangent vector with respect to an arc length function? And of course, in practice, we don't actually compute it that way, right? I gave three ways to compute it yesterday. Let's see here. Them all in the same. Okay, so there's one. So, first of all, you've probably got everything parameterized with respect to time, not arc length. Right? So, you're actually going to need time derivatives. And those, yes, we can actually compute. So, if we use the prime as our time derivative, then this right here is equal to the magnitude of speed, or the magnitude of velocity, which is speed. So in terms of our velocity notation, it's the time derivative of the unit tangent vector divided by the magnitude of velocity. That was one way to get it. We could also get it by using overload this. Let me just write V for speed here. R prime. There's the cross product way. Cross product of velocity and acceleration divided by speed cubed. You take the magnitude of that. And then there's another way. We didn't actually do an example of it, but you can take the perpendicular component of acceleration divided by speed squared. So now all of these give the same answer. They all give the same answer. So you use whichever one is easiest for the problem at hand. Right? There isn't a right way or a wrong way. It's just which one is easiest for the particular problem I'm doing. And as I said, if your speed is constant, this one is probably the easiest one. But if you compute the velocity vector and it's not a constant, it depends on time, then if you just want the curvature, this second one is probably your best bet. I mentioned the third one because if you want this thing called the unit normal, which you need to figure out these nice circles, then this third one might be better for you, because it can give you information not just about the curvature, but if you actually look at the direction of the A perp there, then you can actually get the unit normal. That's usually the easier way to get it. Okay, and so in terms of all the symbols here, remember, V for velocity is just the time derivative of your position. A is the time derivative of velocity, so the second derivative of position with respect to time. And this one, we haven't used it yet, but this would just be the part of your acceleration vector that is perpendicular to your velocity vector. And you may or may not remember from chapter 2 how to compute those projections, right? It's a formula involving dot products. Come back to that. So this thing here, you can think of it as the magnitude of a turning vector, right? I described it, this curvature kappa, as a measure of how tightly we're turning as we go along some curved path. But you can also ask, which way are we turning? Are we turning to the left, to the right, up, down? Right? And so that's exactly what the unit normal vector gets at. It's the direction of your turning. And if you're looking at these vectors here, here basically we're taking a magnitude of a vector, this t prime. That vector actually points in the direction of where you're turning. I can show you why in a minute. So that's one way to get it, is to compute the time derivative of your unit tangent vector. That makes sense, right? The unit tangent vector points where you're going with magnitude 1. So if I'm going this way, and I turn a little bit this way, so now I'm going this way, my unit tangent vector is turned, right? From here to here. Now, which way, from here to a change of here, the difference, this vector minus that vector, would be an arrow from here to here, right? So that would mean I'm turning that way, right? That makes sense. Okay, so this is what we're going to define as the direction of turning, or in fancier words, the unit normal vector for a curve. And just like with curvature, there's more than one way to get it. Okay. If your speed is constant, then this is probably the easiest way to get it. The same as with computing curvature. If your speed is constant, it's pretty easy to take the time derivative of the unit tangent vector. If your speed is not constant, you may be better off actually using an alternative. So V cross A generally does not point in the direction of where you're turning, sorry. But A perp does, okay? So the perpendicular part of acceleration does point in the direction of turning. So these two vectors are actually parallel. So, two ways to compute this thing. So, let's see. We can make a little picture. We're going along a curve. So, our unit tangent vector points this way. If the curve is parameterized such that these are earlier times and these are later times. So that's what my arrows are indicating. As t time increases, I'm going this way along the curve. So at some moment in time, the unit tangent vector points here. Of course, at another moment in time, the unit tangent vector points somewhere else. And the unit tangent vector is literally tangent to the curve. Okay. If this is a two-dimensional curve, you could find the line that goes through that point and parallel the unit tangent vector. You could have done that with implicit differentiation back in calculus 2 even. Now this unit normal vector also is rigged to have magnitude 1. So I'll try and make these arrow lengths all the same. And it points in the direction in which you're turning. And it's perpendicular to that unit tangent vector. Try and make it look perpendicular. Okay. Your acceleration vector may not point in the same direction as the unit normal vector, unfortunately. Acceleration can do two things. One thing, it can change your speed. Even if you're moving in a straight line, you could be accelerating, speeding up, positive acceleration, slowing down, negative acceleration. But acceleration can also change your direction, if you think of acceleration as a vector. So in general, acceleration has two parts to it. The parallel part just affects how your speed is changing. The perpendicular part affects how your direction is changing. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. We'll talk about section 4, but you have a picture like this. So say my acceleration vector was like this. Okay. Don't make too much of the length of the arrow, because this has units in, say, meters per second squared, whereas the T and the N have no physical units. They're just magnitude 1, no meters, no seconds. I'm just making it big to make things easier to see. So if we had this situation, what's going on here is there's two parts to this. There's the part of it that is parallel to your velocity vector. If you want, we can draw a velocity vector. Again, don't make too much of an action. If the unit tangent vector is pulling that way, then so is our unit velocity vector, something like that. But don't try to compare the magnitudes, because this is, say, in meters per second, or is accelerations in meters per second squared. The point is that of the directions, you can break up your acceleration into the part of it that's parallel to where you're currently going, right? Parallel to your current direction. That's just the projection onto V. You can get with the dot product, and then the other part of it, the leftover part, is the perpendicular part, which you just get by subtracting from the whole acceleration vector the parallel part, like that. Okay. It's this part of it that's actually making you turn. This part of it, in this case, it's making you speed up because it's pointing the same direction as velocity, so it's speeding you up. So if you actually want to get a unit normal vector and an osculating circle, and say you actually want to do something, say with two-dimensional curve, you actually want to plot something like this on your graphing calculator in parametric plot mode. How could you actually get formulas for those circles, right, given a formula for the parabola? Right? It can be done, right? That's what I did this morning, right, on my computer. So, to do it, we just need to know the radius of the circle and the center of the circle. And if it's in 3D, you also need to know the plane of the circle, or two arrows in parallel to the plane of the circle. But essentially, we have the arrows that we need, T and N. And if we get the radius of the circle, then
The center of the circle will just be distance, that radius from our current position, going that way along the normal vector. Okay. Now, what is that radius of curvature of this osculating circle? How do I get these circles? Each of these circles is kissing, osculating is the fancy word for kissing, right? Is kissing the parabola at one of three different points. So the smallest circle is kissing the parabola at the very vertex. And then the next bigger circle is kissing the parabola at a point a little bit to the right and lower. And then the third largest circle is kissing the parabola right over there, a little bit further to the right. So the radius of curvature is just the reciprocal of curvature. And on the your handout was two-sided, right? There's one side with the pictures, the other side, I give a proof that basically says if you have a true circle and you compute the curvature of that true circle, then regardless of what speed you're going, the true radius of that circle, you know, in the geometric sense, actually is the reciprocal of curvature. Or equivalently, curvature is the reciprocal of that radius. So it does make sense to actually define, for any curve, circular or not, at each point, a radius of curvature that you can think of it as the circle that best approximates your curve near that point. So at the top of the parabola, the best approximation of it is the little circle. A little bit off to the right from the top, you need a bigger circle, because that does the best job approximating the parabola. Something similar happens in physics with understanding gravity. If I toss this marker, it's a parabola, and it's technically also, more accurately, the tip of an ellipse in a very eccentric orbit around the center of the Earth. It's very nice to be able to approximate things by circles. So then you can do problems where... I remember a physics problem, there's some curvy road. At this point on the road, the radius of curvature is blah, blah, blah. The incline is this angle. The coefficient of friction of this is so and so on. How fast can you drive on this road without skidding off, right? How fast can you take the curve? And all I needed was not the exact shape of the curve, but the radius of curvature and other physical parameters. But at any point on the curve, a lot of times all that you really care about then is the radius of curvature. In that actual physics problem, what's really hard to figure out accurately is the coefficient of friction. So you just have to make conservative estimates. Okay. And now, how do we get one of these osculating circles? Okay, so, kind of a crude diagram here. Try to indicate what's going on. Okay. So let's say here's the origin. I guess 0, 0, 0 if we're in 3D, or just 0, 0 in 2D. If you're in 2D, you can always pretend that there's a third coordinate Z that's just zero all the time, right? Imagine you're in 3D. So any method in 3D can be extended to 2D. So we have our position. I'll call it R0, which is just our position vector at time t equals, let's say, t0 for some particular moment in time. So I need a little subscript there to kind of indicate, okay, this is position at some moment in time. And then I have my normal vector. This is the way I'm turning, but I'm going to multiply it by the radius of curvature so that I get right into the center of my circle. Okay? So radius of curvature times unit normal vector puts me right there at the center of my circle. So this is how we get the osculating circle. We're going to get a parametric formula so we could actually plot it on our calculator or computer. Okay, so first, starting from the origin, we take an arrow to our current position on the curve. There's a bunch of different positions we're going to have to keep in mind here. So this this, I'm using R unadorned as curve position. In a moment, we'll have position on the circle, which is a different matter, right?
Okay.
And how do we then get the from the center to the rim of the circle? Well, then it's just a polar coordinate thing. We can make another copy of this R times N arrow, say, if we want to go to that end of the circle. And let's see, where's our unit tangent vector? And that's pointing up this way, right? So that's perpendicular to the unit normal vector. Okay, so let's take R times the unit tangent vector. And this gets us to two different points on the circle. Fine. I guess I've got 3 points on the circle now, right? If I just followed R0, I'd be at that point on the circle. Now I could follow Rn and then another Rn to get to here, and or instead Rn and Rt to get up there. Or I could have done negative Rt to go down there. In general, though, you would imagine, how do I get to, say, here? Well, let's think polar coordinates. Let's just make up an angle. Maybe we'll, in analogy with polar coordinates, instead of from positive x turning towards positive y-axis, how about in the direction of the unit tangent vector turning towards the unit normal vector, say, right? So I have an angle there. Call it theta if you want, right? Okay. And so if I wanted this, then in analogy with polar coordinates, the arrow I need would work out to be the RT vector times the cosine of theta plus the normal vector times the sine of theta, just like polar coordinates. Okay. So if you put all of these steps together, first we follow the curve's position vector at a frozen moment in time. Then we follow R times the unit normal vector. And then we follow this blue arrow. And you can just add all three of those up to get actual formula here. So I'll call it R for position, but I'll put subscript circle here to tell you I mean position on the circle. So I'm thinking of an arrow that goes from the origin over here to some position on the circle. Okay, so position on the circle will be given by the R0 vector. Right? Get me to that one point on the curve at some moment in time. Followed by that to get me to the center of the circle, R times unit normal, so plus, and then add on finally the blue vector there, some rotated combination of tangent and normal, right? And we can let theta go from, say, 0 to 2 pi if we want to get a full circle. So now this is something we can actually do on our calculators or computers. But so far it's all symbols, right? Your calculator probably wants some numbers here, like 5t or 5 times the cosine of t plus 7 times the sine of t and so on, right? That's the idea, and now I can do an example where we actually implement it. But first, let's see here. Any questions about all these ideas? Remember the key points, right? Curvature is reciprocal of radius of curvature, magnitude of turning. We have a new concept, this direction of turning now. And once we know those two things, we can put them together into a little recipe here to get one of these osculating circles that at a given point, they said osculating means kissing, so it's kissing the curve. It's the best circle for approximating the curve at this point. And we just did some vector addition. One, two, three. One, two, three. Alright. Okay. So I have on the website also an example of a 3D, a truly 3D, not just flat situation, where, let's see, hold up here. You might have already seen, if you look at the website, let's see here, osculating circle, scooting it down now. Works. Okay. Apparently my link is broken, but I'll fix that. Okay. There it is. This is a helix. And there's the osculating circle kissing the helix at a particular point. So all of this works in 3D as well. Okay. I'll fix the link later. Okay, so to not overwhelm you with a bunch of horribly complicated formulas beyond what's already there, let me do an example with constant speed. Okay, for example, the helix picture I showed you on the screen, it had. Actually, the helix not going around the z-axis, right? That's the default, but why not go around something else for variety? This helix went around
x-axis.
Okay. This is a helix going around the x-axis.
The plotting program, I think, had the axes turned around like this. So it was that. I'm trying to make sure I don't have the helix spiraling the wrong way. Let's see. I guess I should come around kind of like this. I don't know if that looks any different to you.
There is a handedness, you know, right-handed screws versus left-handed screws. I'm trying to indicate it correctly. Okay. Okay, so there it is. And let's say I'll match what we did here.
So we're going to look at, find all these goodies, right? I'm going to find the radius of curvature, unit tangent, unit normal, and the osculating circle at roughly about 3 revolutions since we crossed the YZ plane, so kind of 3 turns of the screw that way. So about 19 radians, that's roughly 3 revolutions, right? 3 times 2 pi. I think it's slightly more than 3 revolutions, because 19 is slightly more than 6 pi. So, okay, so. 1, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, so right there, right? It's t equals 19. Okay. Okay. Let's see if we can do that. So, things got to stay, choices. Choices, backboard. Okay. So, what's going to happen? All right, okay, so. Velocity is the time derivative of position. No problem there. So far, it's easy calculus derivatives. There's acceleration. Okay. Now, if I want the unit tangent vector, I have to get a parallel version of velocity, but with the magnitude changed to 1. So I would need to divide by the magnitude of velocity. Well, what is the magnitude of velocity? Okay, let's see here. Okay, 1/7 squared sine squared of t plus cosine squared of t. Okay. That's just 1, because you're taking sine squared and cosine squared at a common angle t. Okay, so that's not so bad. I'm going to do a bunch of simplification, would look like that. Okay. So it's square root of 50 over 7, just a hair over 1, right? The speed's slightly more than 1, because if there was no z part to the velocity, the speed would be 1, but we're going upward at speed 1/7, so speed's a little bit more than 1. Okay, so we divide by this fraction, so multiply by its reciprocal. That works out to this, if you want to see the components separately.
So this is a vector of magnitude 1, and you plug in any time t, and it'll point in the direction where the curve is going at that moment in time. The helix is going around this way, right? So we're going to have a unit tangent vector pointing kind of that way. Let's see what this is at t equals 19. We can ask our calculator. Right? Ever so slightly faster, I think, if you factor out that root 50. Maybe you don't have to type in square root of 50 three times. Roughly speaking, it's about 0.141, negative 0.990. Wait, hold on. Oh, I forgot to turn my t into a 19. Let me fix that. Negative 0.148. And roughly, and then positive 0.979. And if you squared each of these three numbers and add them up, you would get roughly 1. Right? It really is a unit vector. Okay. All right. Great. Radius of curvature. We're going to need to know the acceleration vector as well to get our radius of curvature, depending on how we compute it. All right, so let me go ahead and figure out the acceleration at t equals 19. Okay, that's just plugging in here. You're absolutely correct. Thank you. Okay. And okay, I've got my unit tangent vector. I've got my acceleration vector. Let's use the method where we get the perpendicular part of acceleration. Okay. So the projection along V is the same as the projection along T because they're parallel. So I'm going to take advantage of that. If you don't believe that, I mean, I can draw you a picture, right? Here's V. Maybe T is smaller because V's magnitude is too big, right? If you have some slanted A, right, you're still going to have the same part of A parallel to V as the part that's parallel to T, right? It's the same decomposition of A, right? The part that's parallel to V is the same as the part that's parallel to T. Okay, so now why would I bother to use that fact? Because for unit vectors, right, the projection formula is simpler. And I already went to the trouble of getting the unit tangent vector. I'm going to take advantage of it. Remember, the general formula is slightly more complicated. You had to divide by the magnitude squared of the thing you were projecting onto. So T is a unit vector. In some sense, I already did that part. Okay, so I have to do a little dot product, right? Okay. Zero times that. It's, what are we gonna grab? If you work this out carefully, you'll see that these negative times negative is a positive. Here, negative times positive is a negative. They actually do cancel out. And for the first components, 0 times that is 0. And if you look at it in terms of exact formulas, negative cosine t times negative sine of t versus sine of t, well, negative sine of t times positive cosine of t, they actually do cancel out. Because in this particular example, because I'm going at constant speed, the acceleration vector is all perpendicular. It doesn't have to be zero in general. If you like, you can think of this as zero because speed is constant in this example. Right? In an example where speed is not constant, you might not be so lucky, right? But if it wasn't zero, it would just be some other number, and we'd still be okay. Okay. That's what I said earlier about the parallel part of acceleration changes your speed. The perpendicular part turns it. In this example, your speed is always the same, so that's why it happened to work out that way. I picked the example to be nice. Okay. So, a few shortcuts in there. Now, we want to get unit normal vector, okay? So, okay, so now we know that all we gotta do is just take the vector in the direction of the perpendicular part of A, which happens to be the same as all of A in this example. So I just need to take this thing here and divide by its magnitude. And it's going to look like this. Except without the 0.141, and with these two switched around, with the signs a little bit different. Well, let me double check. I think it's already a unit vector in this particular example. Because it's cosine t and sine of t, so yeah, I made the example very, very nice.
Yeah. If I wasn't making all these extra things nice, I'd never finish this before the class time ran out. Anyways. Okay. So, we have the unit normal vector. We have the unit tangent vector. What about the radius of curvature? One, we got that first. Then we got the unit normal vector. What about the radius of curvature? Well, with the magnitude of A perpendicular, I can get it. Right. That was so it's the reciprocal of curvature. And one of the formulas I gave for curvature was down here, right? I don't know if you can see it, but take the magnitude of perpendicular part of acceleration divided by speed squared. Okay, so the reciprocal of that is speed squared over magnitude of a perp here. And for us, that will be, okay, speed squared will be that divided by 1 in this particular example. Okay. So there's your radius of curvature. Using that third formula we didn't get to last time for any of the examples. Okay, so 50 over 49 is the radius of curvature. Why is it that? Does that even make sense? It was a helix. And the way it was set up, you can think of it was a cylinder of radius 1 wrapped around going around the x-axis, right? And then I took a wire and coiled it along this cylinder of radius 1. And as I coil that wire, because there's a bit of a slant as the wire goes around and advances in the x direction, there's room for the circle of oscillation. It's just going to have to be slightly bigger than 1. So that's plausible. A little bit more than 1. You think of it as if we had the wire just wrapped around in a circle, it would be a circle radius 1, and I stretch it out and it becomes a helix. Okay. Now we can put everything together almost to get the osculating circle, right? Let's get that osculating. How do we get the osculating circle? Well, we're going to use our formula there. One seventh. This is the So finally, use this. So there's a factor n there. A group like terms of x.
Why is it negative 0.150 before negative 0.989?
Wait. It's... No. I think it's not. It's the other one. Okay. Here we go. I was thinking of the velocity vector. I'm just... Yeah. Here. Let me just... That's... what it's supposed to be. Okay. Crunch for time as it is. Yeah. I was thinking of the velocity vector, but that's not what you want. You want the position vector. Yeah. Okay. So let's see what we got here. Okay, so we have
all this stuff has to be added together, right? So in the x component, you'd have 19/7, and then if you look at these, the t and the n, what have you got there? Let me sit down again. No x component in the n, but there is an x component here in the t, right? The 1/50. So you have that times r. That's your x component. And then what's your y component? Okay, so then you're going to have cosine of 19 plus r, your 50/49 times the y components here. Right? So you'll have what? Your negative 7 over root 50 sine of 19 from this one. Theta, and then in the normal component we have that negative 0.9, I think that's the negative cosine of 19 times 1 plus the sine of theta. And then in your z component we have a similar looking expression. Then you just need the tangent thing, which is now this. And now here, for the normal vector, it's a negative sine of 19, 1 plus the sine. Big angle bracket at the end. Yeah. Okay. So, at this point, right, I really could take this mess, break it down into actual decimal numbers, right, and have my calculator plot the circle. Right? Well, maybe not, because it's 3D, so I can only plot two components. But I can have my computer plot the circle, and I did. You saw the picture. Right? Okay. Yeah, that kind of stuff. As you can see, there's a lot involved there. Even with all my shortcuts, I'm running over time. Okay. Bigger problem, but it's good practice because you, in the process, you have to figure out these things like unit normal vector, unit tangent vector, radius of curvature. Okay. But, yeah. Running long, so you can go. Thank you for your patience.